we have not spent enough time thinking about death. That's why we are ineffective. Every day we are occupied by deadlines, assignments, exams, childcare, diet, fitness, grocery shopping, and so on. We have to make not one, but three to-do lists just to keep track of everything. Our life is hung in the balance by two Google calendars. Our minds are wandering, always distracted by meetings, appointments, bills, vacations. We don't have time to think about death. That's why we are living an ineffective life. According to C.S. Lewis, one of the greatest Christian thinkers of the 20th century, he says, if you read history, you will find that the Christian who did most for the present world were precisely those who thought most of the next. It is since Christians have largely ceased to think of the other world that they have become so ineffective in this one. It is since Christians have stopped thinking about the afterlife that they have become so ineffective in this one. Stephen Covey, author of the book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, advises to begin with the end in mind. He said, if your ladder is not leaning against the right wall, then every step you take gets you to the wrong place faster. If your ladder is not leaning against the right wall, then every step you take just gets you to the wrong place faster. Would you agree? What is your ultimate goal in life? What is your purpose? And the answer will determine what you should be doing the next hour, the next day, the next month, the next year. Begin with the end in mind means to begin each day, each task, each project with a clear vision of your desired direction and destination. And then continue to flex your proactive muscles to make things happen. The question is, what is your desired direction? What does your destination look like? Do you have a clear vision of your future? I want to make a bold prediction this morning. Less than 100 years from now, every person in this room will be dead. It's not so much a prediction, really. I'm just stating the facts. Less than 100 years from now, every person in this room right now will be living somewhere else and doing something else in eternity. Eternity. What you will be doing then is determined by the actions and decisions today. Do you have a game plan? So why don't we just pause for a bit and do a little mental exercise, right? 82. 82 is an important number. Remember that number. It's the life expectancy in Canada. Now imagine you are at 82. I know you are not, but imagine that you are. And let's just say, okay, you die on the day of your 82nd birthday. Okay, I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just working with the statistics, okay? Just go with me. Let's just say that you die on your 82nd birthday. Now, let's do a little mental exercise. Where will you be at 82 plus 1 second? Where will you be at 82 plus 1 day? Now, I'm not talking about your corpse. Right, I'm talking about you. Where will you be? What will you be doing at 82 plus 1 year? We don't normally think about these things, right? It is good that we do this morning. What will you be doing at 82 plus 100 years? What about 82 plus 1,000 years? After all, human beings are created to live forever. If you are a Christian, you should know this. Begin with the end in mind means to begin each day, each task, each project with a clear vision of your desired direction and destination, and then continue to flex your proactive muscles to make things happen. In order to live effectively, we must begin by forming a clear vision of our destination. The Christian who did most for the present world were precisely those who thought most of the next. It is since Christians have largely ceased to think about the other world that they have become so ineffective in this one. So over the next 3 weeks, we will challenge ourselves to think hard about these things. I will be talking about heaven this morning, and next Sunday, Pastor Craig will come back and he will talk about resurrection and eternal life. And lastly, we will look at the final judgment. So let's talk about heaven this morning. When I mention the word heaven, what comes to your mind? What is your vision of heaven? These are some images that I found when I Google the word heaven. So there is a staircase leading up to the sun. There is white cloud. There's bright light. And there's a city with streets and buildings made of gold. I don't know how you feel about this, but I must admit that I'm not the kind of person who felt drawn to these kind of images. Let me also show you how people used to think about heaven. This is a 15th century depiction. There is God's throne in the middle. On the top of the picture, the saints and angels surrounding the throne. Okay, I want to show you another one. This is the Empyrean from the Divine Comedy. This is the dwelling place of God. And then thousands upon thousands upon thousands of heavenly beings are circling a bright light in the middle. Now, this next one is different. This one is called the Adoration of the Lamb. And on this painting, we have the Old Testament prophets or the Old Testament figures in the foreground on your left, holding some kinds of books. And then on the right-hand side are the New Testament apostles kneeling in the foreground, and the church is following them. They are wearing red robes, bishop, archbishop, pope, whatever. And then angels are surrounding the Lamb, singing praises in the middle. And there are the martyrs at the background on the left, and the virgins approaching the Lamb from the right. Now, how many of you are excited about going to heaven and hanging out with these guys forever? Incidentally, the thing, the rod kind of thing that stick out in the foreground, that's not an antenna. It's a water fountain. So you can forget about having Wi-Fi in heaven. Look at this picture. This is the reason why we don't think about these things. Heaven is boring. Only boring people go to heaven. None of these images, whether ancient or contemporary, hold much appeal to us. The only reason why we would choose heaven is because of the alternative. Hell is probably worse. As boring as heaven appears to be, hell looks crazy. It looks scary. It sounds bad. And if we were given a choice, a real choice, you know what we would choose? Earth. We would rather live forever here on earth This life is where all the fun is. There is shopping, there is ramen, there is hot spring, there is concerts. Honestly, won't you rather spend eternity in Japan than in heaven? Brothers and sisters, let me tell you what went wrong here. We have a wrong vision of heaven. When we think about heaven, most people think in terms of images. But the biblical authors are not interested in giving us an image of heaven. If the intention were to give us an image, John would have painted the Revelations rather than writing it. The Bible gives us a vision of heaven rather than an image of heaven. If you can grasp the vision, it will change our life, this life. We will be living this day, this morning, this hour with the end in mind. So let's turn to Revelation and see what the Bible says about heaven. Revelation chapter 20. This is the prelude to heaven. 20 verse 11. Then I, John, saw a great white throne and him, God, was seated on it. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne. And books are opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. A record of your life, of everyone's life, is being kept somewhere in the cloud, much like Facebook. This is the heaven's version of Facebook. It knows everything about you. Every person that has ever lived on earth has an account in heaven, literally. Verse 12, and the dead were judged by what was written in the books according to what they had done. And the sea gave up the dead who were in it. Death and Hades gave up the dead who were in them, and they were judged, each one of them, according to what they had done. So John was looking at the resurrection and the final judgment, which we will talk more about in the next two Sundays. Verse 14, 15. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire, and if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire as well. So in the end, even death will be defeated. All the bad guys are thrown into the fire. That's the prelude. Turning the page, Revelation 21, John was given a personal tour. He had a glimpse of the end game, and he found himself standing at the goal of history, at the conclusion of time. And he was reporting life from the future back to the present. I know the grammar is all messed up, but you know what I mean. John says, chapter 21, verse 1, then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God. John is reporting the main attraction of heaven. If you miss this, you miss the entire vision of heaven. The main attraction is this: God is there. God is there. God will be with us. We will be with him. And you say, okay, what's the big deal? Now, it turns out that if God is not there, heaven will no longer be heaven. Heaven is heaven because God is there. 21 verse 4, God will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and death will be no more. Neither shall there be mourning, nor crying, nor pain anymore, for the former things have passed away. Things that have harassed us throughout history will be removed once and for all. we won't find them in heaven. There is no more suffering, no more pain, no more death, because God is there, God is with us. There will be no more Holocausts, no more landmines, no more atomic bombs, no more chemical weapons. God is there. No more guns, no more drugs, no more terrorism, no more school shooting, no more opioid crisis. God is there. No more hunger, no more famine, no more poverty, no more global warming. The first feature that John has noticed is the absence of evil and suffering in heaven. All the things that have plagued us in this life will end. Cancer will end. There will be no need for chemotherapy. Heart disease will end. Stroke will end. God is there. When you meet your child in heaven, he or she will no longer have autism or eczema or any physical disability. God is there. He is with us. Diabetes will end. Pneumonia will end. AIDS will end. God is there. And when you meet your parents or your grandparents in heaven, they will no longer have depression. You will no longer see them on wheelchairs. They will recognize you and you will recognize them because Alzheimer's will end. Dementia will end. Parkinson's disease will end. God is there. The decay is over. Corruption is undone. Death is defeated. God is there. Brothers and sisters, do you see the vision that John is describing from the future? Do you see yourself in heaven? Do you see yourself in the vision? John continues to describe it the best he can. Verse 5, and he who was seated on the throne said, "Behold, I'm making all things new." So while John and the church at the present time are suffering intense persecutions from the Roman Empire, God wants to redirect their sights. Look here. Don't lose heart. I'm making all things new. And he said, "Write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true." This is not a hallucination. You're not dreaming. This is as real as it gets. The new heaven and new earth is as real as the persecution that you are facing. It is as real as the agony of your grief as you see a brother suffering because of his faith. It is as real as the anguish of your heart when you see a sister being locked up because of her belief. It is as real as the burden of your pain when you are being exiled and being separated from the church. Mark my words. I have three words for you. God said, "It is done. It is done." You know, none of the emperors that you have known in your lifetime could have said that. Tiberius couldn't say it. Claudius couldn't say it. Nero, Vespasian, Titus, they couldn't say it. Domitian, the one who put you here in exile, he couldn't say it. Listen to me, John. As powerful as they seem to you now, none of them has achieved anything. It has always been and will always be the same old Rome, the same old crowd, the same old politics of greed, of bloodshed, of power struggle, of exploitation and assassination. The Roman Empire, listen to me, the Roman Empire is passing away. And a new heaven and new earth is coming. Tell them what you have seen. Write down these three words, because I want the church to know that it is done. Brothers and sisters, do you know what this little phrase has meant for the church? This phrase has helped the church to persevere 2,000 years of sufferings and persecutions. It means that the prayer that Jesus has taught his disciples will finally be completely answered. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. You see, in the current form of the world, heaven and earth are two separate entities. Heaven is the place where God's will is sovereign, right? When God wills something in heaven, it gets done. Earth is where we live. Earth is the place where human desires are mixed with the devil's schemes, and all sorts of evil and corruption prevail. So our prayer on earth, the Lord's prayer, has been, God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We have been praying this prayer for centuries. But now you know, now we know, God has heard our prayers. He is making all things new. Now, what is the new thing that God is making? Heaven and earth united together. God dwells with us. We dwell with him in the same space. Heaven and earth will no longer be separated. They have become one. It is done. And in that place, God's will be everywhere. No matter which way you turn, front, back, left, right, up, down, God's will is everywhere. Heaven and earth is one. We dwell with God and he dwells with us. And that means his will is done everywhere. The prophet Isaiah anticipated the new heaven and new earth long before John had seen it. Isaiah prophesied and he said, "The wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the young goat, and the calf and the lion together, and a little child shall lead them." What is he saying? "The cow and the bear shall graze," meaning they eat grass together in the field. "The young shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox." What is Isaiah trying to say? "The nursing child shall play over the hole of the cobra," that's a snake, "and the weaned child shall put his hand on the adder's den," that's another snake. What a peculiar world that is being described here. "They shall not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the water covers the sea." Now, this is what Isaiah means. One day, the knowledge of the Lord and the will of the Lord will be everywhere, as water covering the sea. Of course, the water covers the sea. It won't be the sea without the water. Same thing, same idea. It won't be heaven if it is not covered by God's will. God's will is everywhere in the new creation. His law, His word, His knowledge, His will permeates every inch of space in His new creation. You can't run away from it. You can only run in it. So this is the good news. When the will of God is everywhere, love is everywhere. Every direction you turn, every person you meet, every relationship you build, love will be there. Because love is everywhere. Goodness is everywhere. Beauty is everywhere. Joy is everywhere. Peace is everywhere. When God's will is everywhere, there will be shalom in everything. Shalom. Everything. Therefore, the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, the leopard shall lie down with the young goat, the calf and the lion together, and the little child shall lead them. Do you get it? Do you see it? Do you see the vision? Do you see yourself in the vision? The main attraction of heaven is God. God is there. And when God is dwelling with us, there are three features that you will notice. Number one, evil and suffering end. Number two, heaven and earth are united together. God's will is everywhere. Shalom in everything. Here's number three. Chapter 22, verse 3. No longer will there be anything accursed, meaning nothing will remain under a curse. But the throne of God and the Lamb will be in it, and His servants will worship. His servants will worship Him. The word worship has a double meaning here. It means both worship and service. So in the new heaven and new earth, His servants will finally be able to fulfill the purpose for which human beings are created. That is to worship God and to serve Him. This is the great part. This is the amazing part. In the current world, in this world, it is not easy to worship and serve God. In many parts of the world, Christians has run into opposition. We face persecutions. Our faith is ridiculed all the time. But imagine a time when all of God's enemies will be removed. First the devil, then his followers. They are thrown into the lake of fire. Death is also defeated. Decay is done away with. There is no more sickness, no more pain, and no more sufferings. The curse of sin is annulled. Now, can you imagine what it will be like to worship God and serve Him in this place, in the new heaven and the new earth? Can you imagine the joy, the synergy, how people will come together to create marvelous things? Can you imagine the fruitfulness, the glory, and the fulfillment that comes as a result? We will need a new definition of work. Because work will no longer feel like a drag. We won't be working for survival. We won't be motivated by greed. There is no need for power struggle at work. We will work because it's fun to. The love of God motivates us. Work needs a new definition in the new heaven and new earth. Then we come to the best part. 22 verse 5. They will need no light or lamp or sun. For the Lord will be their light, and they will reign forever and ever. Who are the they? They are His servants. That's the church. That's us. We will reign with God forever. Now, can you Can you wrap your mind around the possibility of reigning and working together with God? Can you wrap your mind around the joy, the satisfaction, and the fun of working together with Daddy? That's crazy. When I was reading this the first time, I was amazed. How come nobody has ever told me how exciting heaven is supposed to be? And now that I know, I can never let it go. It has transformed my faith and strengthened my hope. Because when God is with us in the new heaven and new earth, evil and suffering end. God's will is everywhere. We will reign with him forever. So this is the message that John, this is the vision that John has seen, and he's delivering it back to the church. He's telling us that, hey guys, this is where history is heading. This is the arrow of time. We now have a clear vision of God's future for humankind. The question for me and for you is this. Do you see yourself in this vision? If heaven is so marvelous, do we see ourselves in it? The question is important because one cannot assume that all Christians will go to heaven. I mean, it would be naive to think that since I'm a Christian, I think I will get in. Are you sure? Because nowhere in the Bible have I read, "Thou shalt enter heaven if thou be a Christian." On the contrary, Jesus said, Matthew 7:21, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven." Notice again the relationship between heaven and the will of God. The Bible is incredibly consistent. What matters? Claiming that you are a Christian doesn't help. What matters is a commitment to follow the will of God. Because on that day, many will say to me, "Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name? And cast out demons in your name? And do many mighty works in your name?" And then I will declare to them, "I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness." So let me ask you again in all seriousness. This is not a rhetorical question. Do you see yourself in heaven? One must want heaven to enter heaven. Imagine a Christian secretly enjoying the pleasure of sin. I know God is holy. I know that he's righteous. But Jesus has died on the cross. My sin have been forgiven. That means I can sin over and over again and I will be forgiven, right? Imagine deep down, we harbor sinful desires. So what's wrong with a little pornography? I'm not hurting anyone. So what if I lie? This is just a small talk with a total stranger. So what if I flirt a little bit? Trust me, nothing is going to happen. What's wrong with hoarding money and stuff? It's my money. When a part of us enjoys the pleasure of sin, wouldn't it be presumptuous to say that we should all have a place in heaven? God said, "Behold, I'm making all things new. It is done. To the thirsty, I will give from the spring of the water of life without payment." But, there's a but. "As for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, the sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death." You see, there is no place for sin in heaven. There's no darkness in heaven. There is no evil, no impurities, not even a shadow in heaven. Because Jesus is the light, and the light is everywhere. And that is why not every person will make it to heaven. While we are on it, why don't we reflect further? Imagine for your whole life, you have never given much thought on pleasing God. You could care less about His will. You don't read the Bible. You don't pray. You don't serve. You don't care about anyone else except perhaps your own family. You're always full of yourself. You are the center. You need to be the center of everything, and the world revolves around you. But guess what? Things don't quite work that way in heaven. In fact, you may be annoyed in heaven because things don't always go your way. Honestly speaking, some of us won't even like heaven. You know what I mean? C.S. Lewis, again, wrote a fiction about a bus tour to heaven. It's an interesting book. It's called The Great Divorce. And he says, there are only two kinds of people in the end. Those who say to God, "Thy will be done." And those whom God says in the end, "Thy will be done." All that are in hell, choose it. In Lewis' view, people would rather live angrily in hell than to find joy in heaven. Why is that? And here is why. The choice of every lost soul, people in hell, the choice of every lost soul can be expressed in the words, "Better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven." Better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven. People stay in hell because they have chosen to. This is why I'm raising the question again and again. History is heading toward the new heaven and new earth. The question is, do you see yourself in the vision? One must want heaven in order to enter heaven. You must want Jesus to spend eternity with Him. Makes sense, right? Pastor John Piper asked this hypothetical question. It's hypothetical. The critical question for our generation and for every generation is this: if you could have heaven with no sickness and with all the friends you ever had on earth, all the food you ever liked, wow, and all the leisure activities that you ever enjoyed, Switch, Nintendo, and all the natural beauties you ever saw, all the physical pleasures you have tasted, and no human conflict or any natural disaster, could you be satisfied with heaven if Christ is not there? The irony is, many Christians would read this and say, "You know what? I might actually be okay with that." Of course, the truth is, it won't be heaven without Christ. Just as there won't be a sea without water. Evil and suffering end because Christ is there. God's will is everywhere because Christ has won the victory. He is now sitting at the right hand of God. Jesus is at the center. He is the main attraction and everything revolves around him. Miss Jesus and we will miss heaven. So let me ask you again. Do you see yourself in the vision? And if the answer is yes, I want Jesus, I want to be with him, I can see myself, I'm absolutely see myself in this vision, then that's great. Let the vision seize you. Let it grasp you. Let it sink into the core of your being and let it be the first thought that comes to your mind every morning. Begin with the end in mind. Because there's Jesus in the new heaven and new earth, and I can see myself there. I can see myself there. I'm 82 plus 100 years old, and that's where I want to be. That's whom I want to be with for eternity. So I'm going to begin now. Each hour, each morning, each day, each task, each project, with that vision in mind. Jesus with us in the new heaven and new earth. Brothers and sisters, I want to tell you it's not impossible, okay? Don't let the enemy tell you that it is too difficult. It is not. I've seen people working so hard. People have worked so hard on a vision that they have created for themselves. For example, as a pastor, I have walked with engaged couples. I've walked with many of them. Husband-to-be, wife-to-be, planning for their wedding day. You know how much work that is? It's a lot of work. How do they do it? Each day they look at that great day when they will be holding hands, they will be saying their vows in front of friends and relatives. They will be taking a lot of pictures. They will be thanking a lot of people. They will be feeling grateful. They look at that great day ahead of them, and now they look at their task list, and off they go to work. And every single pair got married in the end. They made it on their wedding day. 2 years later, they would tell me that they are now expecting a child. And it starts all over again. Each day they look forward to that great day when they will be holding a precious child in their hands, in their arms. And they will, and then they look at the picture and they begin reading what to expect when you are expecting. And they look forward to the end of the first trimester, the end of the second trimester, the end of the third trimester. And each day, the vision grows stronger and stronger as the tummy grows bigger and bigger. And 9 months later, guess what happened? A child is born. They will be holding a child in their hands, in their arms, and they will be reading what to expect the first year. They see a vision of the future and begin to work with the end in mind. People do it all the time. Wedding, pregnancy, parenting, saving for college, getting a mortgage, retiring. Now, if we practice it so well on earthly things, shouldn't we practice it even more diligently on eternal things? So my invitation to you is this. If you have seen a vision of heaven this morning, if you are on board with the vision, will you let it trump every other vision that you may have in this life? Trump every other vision that you may have in this life, and let the hope of heaven transform your life today. Will you do that? This is about Jesus. Good Friday, Easter Sunday is a time when we remember what this is all about. The Lord, on the night that he was betrayed, took bread and he gave thanks and he broke it and said, "This is my body given for you." In the same way, after supper, he took the cup and says, "This is the blood of the new covenant. Do this in remembrance of me."
Stands the test of time that lives. beauty of a day divine, when I behold his face, when suffering ceases and sorrows die, and every longing satisfies, then joy
receive the benediction. The Lord said, "Behold, I'm coming soon, bringing my recompense with me to repay each one for what he has done. I am the Alpha and Omega, the first and the last, the beginning and the end. Blessed are those who wash their robes to live a life that is pleasing to the Lord, so that they may have the right to the tree of life. Blessed are those who wash their robes, that they may enter into God's presence. Now be sent into the world. The kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took the lamps, went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, 5 of them were wise. For when the foolish took the lamps, they took no oil with them. But the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. But at midnight, there was a cry. Here comes the bridegroom. Here's the bridegroom. Come out to meet him." Then all those virgins rose and trimmed the lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "Since there will be not enough for both of us, go rather to the dealers. Rush to the dealers and buy for yourself. And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came. And those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgin came and also saying, 'Lord, open for us. Lord, open for us.' But he answered, 'Truly I say to you, I do not know you.'" Watch, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour when the Lord will return. That's how you should walk out this room. Amen. Join us again next Sunday. We will continue the sermon series Afterlife. There is coffee and tea outside. Pastor is happy to pray for you in the front. So see you next week.